Hello, horror fiends, and welcome to Guess What? You're Wrong, the podcast where we dive into all things horror and spoil the hell out of every movie we discuss. With me, Big D, as your host, be prepared for a terrifyingly good time. From classic slasher flicks to contemporary horror masterpieces, we're going to explore the genre from every angle that we can and leave no stone unturned. Horror, Prince, and Shine. New conversations, same podcast. So buckle up, Bonehead, because you're going for a ride.
Enjoy the show!
Now, before we get into this episode too far, I just got a little disclaimer here. First off, all audio used in this podcast is used under the protection of fair use. And as with all the movie reviews that I do here on Guess What? You're Wrong, we're going to spoil the hell out of every single thing we talk about. So, you have been warned. Hello and welcome back to another Half-a-phobia. I think I said it right. Half-a-phobia inducing episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Now, in case you're wondering, half-a-phobia is actually an intense and irrational fear of being touched. So today we are diving back in time into the 20s once again. Let's see here. 1927 with The Unknown. And with me, I have Brian Mitchell. How's it going, Brian?
It's going good. This movie is amazing. I was happy to recommend it to you, and I'm glad that you also realized it's amazing. I feel like it's really unsung as a, you know, like, feel like Lon Chaney, people are like, oh, Phantom of the Opera, Hunchback of Notre Dame, and London After Midnight, and then after that, people don't really know anything that he did or whatever.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when I first started looking this up, when you recommended this movie, I saw Lon Chaney, and the first thing I thought of was Lon Chaney Jr., who's the Mummy. Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And this is the original Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
His dad, I'm guessing, right?
Yep.
Who plays Alonzo in this movie here. Brian, I got to tell you, this hold on. Let's go over The Unknown from 1927, directed by Todd Browning, written by Todd Browning, Waldemar Young, Joseph Farnheim. The main people that it stars is Lon Chaney as Alonzo, Norman Carey as Malabar, Joan, the lovely and beautiful Joan Crawford as Nanon.
Yes.
And John
as
George,
a young teenager, I believe this is her first film.
I think I was reading that she's like, who was like 20 years old in this movie.
I thought she was still a teenager, but you know, they always change their age.
Yeah. That's right. Cause I think,
that era.
I think they were saying that she was 20 years old, but it was one of those instances where they didn't really know when she was born. So they kind of made up, I think that's what I read. They kind of made up the date of when it was going to, when her actual birth date was. And also John George, who plays Kojo. This little guy kind of freaked me out. I'm telling you, he's always hanging around. And the way he's looking, you know, it's like in the scenes where Lon Chaney is with Joan Crawford, Alonzo and Nana, and they're together. He's always like staring, and it's like kind of
very
unsettling a little bit.
I've been watching Death Note with my daughter lately.
Oh yeah.
And you know how like only one person can see the demon.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking this now. Like I didn't research it or anything. I wonder if the little person in there, is he real or he's like Alonzo's imaginary demon imp or something? You know, it seems a possible twist you could throw in there because there aren't enough twists already.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thinking that out loud, because my daughter's been referring to Ryuk as the third wheel, because whenever Light goes out with the whatever the girl's name in that show is, you know, Ryuk's always like standing next to him eating an apple or whatever.
Yeah. Huh. I don't think wait, did you say Death Note?
Yeah.
I don't think I've, what is that?
Oh, it's, so they made an American movie.
I think I saw the American movie.
Fine. Yeah. But the anime is really amazing. The manga is great as well. The Japanese films are the demon monster is way creepier in the Japanese films than in the American ones. But yeah, it's the one where you write in the notebook and then it causes people to die. And a guy that comes across it, he decides to use it instead of to kill his enemies to make the world a better place by killing off serial killers and war criminals and stuff. But then the authorities still say that it's wrong to do that. So shenanigans ensue.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to see. You know, I got to tell you, I don't get any messages or anything all day long. And then as soon as I get on here, start recording, my phone starts blowing up. Like, come on, people. Anyway, Death Note. Yeah, I saw that American version one. And then my son, one of my older sons came over and he was wearing a Death Note shirt. And I was like, hey, I had no idea that it was anything but the American version, American movie.
Oh, yeah, nope. Yeah. No idea. I'm sure the American seems fine if you aren't familiar with the other ones, you know, one of those types of deals.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good movie. I mean, it was decent. I don't really remember it too much. I'll have to check it out again here soon. But so back to this movie here, The Unknown. Now, do you remember when you first saw this movie?
Let me think here. It was probably around 2003 or 2004 that I think it was when a new print had recently been discovered or something. I don't know if you read some of the same stuff about it as I did, but they thought it was a lost film for a long time and had trouble finding it because it was just said unknown on the boxes. So people were like, oh,
it's unknown.
Yeah, it's unknown. Nobody knows what movie this is, but you know, it's just. But they eventually found a print or whatever, and so I saw it on Turner Classic Movies during like a Lon Chaney weekend or something.
Yeah, so it says right here in 2022, it restored of a newly it was a restoration of a newly found Czech print, and they showed it at Portadown Silent Film Festival. And contains about 10 minutes of rediscovered footage. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the base storyline in this is, I mean, at first, you know, when they're showing Alonzo at first, you know there's something up with him. There's something fishy about the guy. And he's all buttering up to Joan Crawford, to Nanon.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I think it's better just to use the actor names.
Nanon, Alonzo, Malabar.
What
names are those? Yeah. I mean, he's always buttering up to Joan Crawford. You know, he's trying to, you could tell that he's trying to win her over, but he plays the armless man or the handless man or something. They call him the handless man, right? Man with no hand or something like that.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly what his billing is.
Basically, yeah, they're working at a circus. It is worth mentioning.
He's like 60 years older than her. It feels like, something.
Absolutely,
it does not feel appropriate.
Maybe only
50 years older. Yeah.
But you know, they're working at the circus, like sideshow people, whatever. And Malabar is the strong guy, strong man. Seeing Malabar, Norman Carey as Malabar playing a strong man, it kind of was a little odd. When you think about the strongmen of today, and then you look at his character playing a strongman, bending all that stuff, and you're like, wow, times have changed.
Yes, skinny people used to be stronger than they are today.
I guess so in the 20s. But yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, we have Lon Chaney's buttering up to Joan Crawford, who is awfully young in this. I mean, I honestly had never seen any of these earlier Joan Crawford movies. And I was doing some research on other movies that she was in the 20s, and she's got a lot. I mean, a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, they ground out movies so fast then, you know, it's like, you know, like 3 to 4 weeks production time per film, and just kept cranking them out.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to dig into some more of her movies here, because I really enjoyed watching her in this movie. And like, she has that hapophobia where she's afraid of, you know, being touched. She's afraid of being
more specific. Being held.
Hold on, you're breaking up.
Men's arms. Oh, sorry.
You're getting all broke. You're broken up.
Can you hear me now?
All garbled and blah, 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 like that. There.
Okay, am I back?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, she's scared of being held by men's arms, and men always try to hold her with their arms, making Alonzo allegedly the perfect man.
Yeah, because he has no hands or arms. And that's why one of the things she says is that, you know, Malabar, Norman Carey, is always grabbing her, always touching her, always trying to hold her. And the scenes where Joan Crawford is with Norman Carey, when they're talking, it's fine. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, and Joan Crawford's got that look on her face like she's interested, like she wants to be there with him and talk to him. But then he reaches out and touches her, and she just shrieks. She falls, you know, and it's a silent film. So you really have to look at her reaction, her bodily, the way she's acting with her body and her face. And it looks like she's actually afraid of this guy. I mean, of being touched. And
Good acting.
Are you still there?
No, I'm here. Good acting, I say.
Yeah, it is. And this is, you know, you look at I hate to do this, but you have to compare him to the actors of today. How many actors of today do you think could actually portray a character in a silent film and put across like what she does in fear by just her bodily expressions and her facial expressions? I mean, that she was a real actress.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of these, Lon Chaney as well, you know, he was silent films, but being able to portray what he needs to get across with no audio, with no words.
Yeah.
It's spectacular. And this is one of the reasons why I really like silent films. You know, like earlier I covered that Nosferatu, and being able just to watch it, because you have to pay attention. Nowadays you have movies, you can play it and you can go about doing your business and just listen. These old movies, you can't do that. You got to pay attention in order to be able to catch what's going on in the movie. And in this movie here, that fear that Joan Crawford shows, it's awesome. And the comfort that she shows when she's with Lon Chaney, it's awesome. You know, the way she's always buttering up to Lon Chaney, you know, she's hugging him, she's touching him, and you're like, oh, wow, that's a couple there.
I mean, it seems inappropriate, but at the same time, like, given her thing that she's afraid of people without arms and he's a guy without arms, it seems like, even the age thing, still, it might work out.
Yeah.
But then we find out something, a reason it won't work out.
There was, when this scene came up here, you know, he starts taking off, you know, Kojo starts helping him take off his undressing, basically taking off his shirt and all his stuff. And then you only see the back of him, but it's like a girdle he's wearing. And I was like, dude's got arms. No way. And sure enough, once they get this whole girdle thing off of him, he lets his arms out. I was like, dude, he's got a scam going on there.
Yeah.
But I also in this scene here too, he takes a lot of time to like shake off his hands and his arms, you know, trying to get the blood flowing back to him. It's not like, hey, he took it off and I'm fine, I'm ready to go. There's a scene there where he's spending a lot of time, you know, rubbing his arms, rubbing his hands, trying to shake him, getting the blood flowing, going back to him. That was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. Like I don't think we mentioned it. So yeah, he's armless and he's a sideshow freak because of that, but he's also the knife thrower.
Yeah. I forgot. You know, and he was a criminal, which is why he took this job, this position. Right. But when they at the beginning got Joan Crawford on that, standing up on that board, and he's throwing knives with his feet, I was like, wow, dude, and throughout the whole movie, he's doing everything with his feet. I mean, yeah, now I don't know.
And smoking cigarettes.
I don't know if they got like somebody else below him using their feet, or if that's actually his feet.
So I don't think there's information about every scene, but I saw something that there was a real guy that had no arms and had learned to use his feet for things. And they like had him laying down under Lon Chaney somehow, and they were using his feet to do things some of the time.
Yeah, cause I was like, man, how in the heck, you know, cause even when he's got his arms out at one point here, he starts using his feet to smoke a cigarette. And then Kojo's like, you gotta recognize your arms are out now. It's like, oh, just throws a cigarette away. Yeah. This whole charade that he's playing here, or charade, however you want to say it. I guess charade's a fancy way to say it. Charade. But this whole charade he's playing, you know that it's going to backfire. You know, there's even at one point there that Joan Crawford gets really close to him and kisses him on the cheek and like holds him. And Kojo's like, no, you can't do that. Because she's going to find out, she's going to feel your arms. You can't do that. And I hadn't thought about that. But when Kojo said that, I was like, dude, yeah, you can't be hugging up on her like that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And for some reason, there's the plot twist where he has two thumbs on one of his hands.
Yeah. At first, when I saw that, because I watched it on YouTube, you know, they had it available on YouTube. I watched it. When I first saw that, I was like, is that like an error in the filming or something? But nope. Sure enough, I mean that's one of the things that would give him away, you know, if he was ever caught, because this he's a criminal of some sort. But he committed crimes, and they know that he has two thumbs.
Yeah.
So by him having this charade going on with you know, no arms, there's no way that they can know that he has two thumbs.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't expect the guy with no arms or hands to be the two-thumbed murderer or whatever he is.
Was he a murderer? I don't remember if they ever said.
They don't. I mean, we do see him murder some people.
Yeah, later on. Yeah.
Try to. So, well, yeah. he murders Joan Crawford's dad.
Yep, who is Zanzi, played by Nick DeRuez? Yeah.
Yeah. Basically because he told him that he shouldn't be making moves on Joan Crawford.
Stop filling her head with all these lies or something like that.
Yeah, so I was unsure, like, so her dad's the ringmaster, and so I was unsure if maybe he did know that he had arms or not.
Well, I'm thinking that the reason Joan Crawford had this fear of being touched or held, I'm thinking because it looked to me like Lon Chaney was always reinforcing that constantly when they were together. I almost thought that maybe that is a fear that he implanted in her head. You know, because later on when he goes to have his surgery, her fear goes away.
Yeah, when she has a couple weeks without Lon Chaney.
Yeah, and that's what she says is, I grew up, you know, or whatever. I don't have those fears anymore. That's what I was thinking was that those were, it was kind of like a brainwashing type of thing that he was trying to get her.
Yeah.
To do that. Which leads back to the father getting pissed off and like, you need to stop doing that. Stop it.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. That's what I took it as. And it being a silent film, I guess you got to kind of make your own.
Yeah. At times you got to make some of your own. Judgments.
But I did mention that Lon Chaney went for a surgery. So what a decision to make, right?
And this thing that he did with meeting the surgeon is weird, where he's like, he sends a letter to a surgeon. He's like, meet me in the surgery room at midnight, leave the door unopened.
Yeah.
And, or unlocked, and
it's something like or so else.
The surgeon does, and he shows up. The surgeon does not recognize him until he shows him that he has two thumbs, and he's like, "I want you to cut off my arms, or I will let people know who you really are."
And that,
and then they never reveal anything about any of this backstory
about the doctor, and that was interesting. Yeah. I'd like to. Well, it was the 20s. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, buying bodies and stuff for educational purposes and that kind of stuff. I don't know. But
I mean, so many possibilities.
The decision to make, you know, he is so in love with Joan Crawford and wants her to be his. He's talking about getting married to her.
Yeah.
But they know that Kojo tells them, if you get married, if you do this, she's going to find out you have hands and she's going to hate you. So his
he choice. Solved that. He knows the solution for that problem.
Yeah. He goes to the surgeon and they lop his arms off. And this is the time period that Joan Crawford is away from Lon Chaney. So, you know, this is when she comes back to Malabar and is like, or Norman Carrion says, I was wrong, you know, and they get together. They start doing their whole making plans for their wedding and everything like that. But then she makes this this comment about, well, I can't do it until Alonzo gets back, though. Which is kind of an odd statement to make, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, so her dad was actually there, but in a way it's like, he's her father figure. I mean, I'm sure she's the damsel that you throw the knives at and you're the knife thrower. So I'm sure you like have some kind of relationship, like natural mentorship relationship in that anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I guess she's, you know, her dad's dead. So maybe she's like, okay, I want Alonzo to give me away at the wedding.
I guess so, maybe.
And when she hugs him when he comes back and she's like, lost a lot of weight. And he goes, are you sick? And he's like, oh, I'm not sick. I have lost some flesh, though.
Yeah.
What a line. Wow.
I have lost some flesh, though. Wow. What, if, I don't know, if you go to give somebody a hug, and they're obviously thinner, and they tell you that they have lost flesh. I'm like, what the hell? Somebody eating you or something?
Yeah, I know, right? Like, yeah, like, it's a very a strange statement.
Strange statement indeed. But then this is where he finds out that Malabar and Nanan, Joan Crawford are going to get married. And he's like, what? He
starts laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
And then it's like
this little break,
you know, some kind of weird Cyrano de Bergerac situation where he had told Alonzo, not Alonzo, he had told Malamar earlier that he should, he's so strong, he should definitely keep trying to grab Joan Crawford and hold her, that will make her fall in love with him. And somehow that advice ended up working.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she was afraid of arms.
Well, yeah. And that's, you know, eventually when that's why I was thinking that when she had her time away from Alonzo, that fear went away because he didn't have, there was nobody there with that brainwashing. So when he, when that fear went away and he did grab her up and she was like, oh, you're such a big man. Oh, hug me. And yeah, that was, and then Alonzo was heartbroken. To say the, he comes up with this plan because, you know, Malabar and Nanon had, they purchased or not purchased, but they're putting on some show, some spectacle because he's a strong man. They rigged up this thing, like these treadmills on each side, and they got a horse. And they're going to tie his arms to the horses, and they're going to run, and they're going to make it look like, you know, he's like, oh, I'm holding them here. They can't run away. And yeah, Alonzo asked...
They're actually on treadmills, yeah.
And Alonzo asked, you know, what happens if one of these treadmills stops? I mean, well, he ripped my arm out or something like that. I was like, wow. And that right there gives Lon Chaney... great idea, because, you know, if you're in love with a woman and she's in love with somebody else, the way to make her fall in love with you is to kill the person she's in love with, right?
Duh.
That makes sense. So there's these levers off to the side that will stop the treadmill. So the auditorium where they're at is full. You know, there's people in there watching them. And Alonzo, Lon Chaney, has this idea that, you know what? I'm going to stop this thing. We're going to have his arms ripped out. She's going to be mine. But he was stronger than he thought, because even after it stopped, Norman Carey, Malabar, still holding on. Still there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude.
Yeah, the horses are like going up on their hind legs and everything, yep. And he's somehow not dying.
Yeah, and they're, you know, the horses are freaking out now. I think Joan Crawford comes in to try and calm one of the horses down. And this scene here was a little odd to me in the movie, because it looked like the horse was a lot bigger than Joan Crawford. I mean, like, huge-wise. So it almost looked like it was a superimposed kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure they did not put her that close to a horse rearing up.
Yeah.
See, and when... you know, and Lon Chaney is there and he's holding the knife with his foot in a threatening way. And I couldn't tell, like, I think at first maybe she thought that he was going to use the knife to throw at the rope to set the horse free so that Malamar would live. And then she realizes that he's actually thinking about throwing the knife in Malamar's heart or something.
Yeah. Wow. But, you know, she gets out there and Alonzo sees that this horse is gonna trample Joan Crawford. You know, he runs out there and his last moment of trying to win her over pushes her out of the way and he gets trampled himself.
Yeah.
And that's the end of Alonzo.
Yeah.
What I want to know is, do Joan Crawford and Norman Carey live happily ever after?
I think they say yes.
And whatever happened to Kojo?
Well, maybe he's a figment of Lon Chaney's imagination, in which case he dies with Lon Chaney.
Could be. Very much well could be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this movie doesn't need to be remade. I feel like it's great as it is. But a prequel would be fun.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know... maybe a prequel of the goings on of Alonzo.
Yeah.
You know, how he came to be at the circus and enamored with Joan Crawford at that time. That would be nice.
And what's the deal with this surgeon?
Yeah.
Like maybe like we could have like two episodes or whatever, you know, of it, you know,
something. And, yeah. Wouldn't have to be too much. I mean, but still make it silent.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Silent, black and white, blue and white, whatever you call that color.
Yep, but that's it. That's the end of the movie. The Unknown from 1927. Brian, I got to thank you for turning me on to this movie, because I had never heard of it. And I'm glad that I got to watch it.
Yeah. Have you seen Laugh Clown Laugh?
No.
So that, by a lot of people, is like thought of as Lon Chaney's best. That's the reason, like, that The Unknown to me feels a lot like that. Like, so Laugh Clown Laugh is later, but it has the same thing where Lon Chaney's in love with a younger girl that's kind of inappropriate. But in this one, he knows it's in Laugh Clown Laugh. He knows it's inappropriate and he doesn't want to do it. And he's helping another guy to get her as the girl. And she realizes that Lon Chaney's in love with her. So she's not going to marry the other guy. And so Lon Chaney kills himself so that she'll be free to be happy. Pretty dark.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is.
And he's a clown.
Clowns are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually there's an opera of it that it's Pavarotti or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know that one?
No.
That's what that's based on.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't seen, you know, a huge amount of Lon Chaney films, but I feel like all of them I have actually been impressed by. And there is a thing that he has where I think he's in one talkie movie way towards the end of his career and he has a small bit part, but there's a thing where he didn't want to be in movies that had and he didn't want to be in the talkies because both of his parents were deaf and he felt like the cinema was an equalizer for deaf people.
Wow.
Because, you know, like you get the same experience of it because you don't have to hear anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
yeah, there's a whole slew of movies from the 20s that, you know, I was looking up silent movies or horror movies from the 20s, and there's a whole slew of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an infinite genre.
Yeah. It's like you got, you know, The Man Who Laughs, The Hands of Orlok.
Yep. Yeah. Man Who Laughs is the movie that, that character inspired the Joker.
Oh, really?
That face. Yeah. Like the Will Thane or whatever his name is. Yeah.
I might have to dive in. I still got one more movie to do from the 20s, and I haven't decided which one it's going to be.
There's so many. I know. So many good ones.
That's why I just got to pick one and go with it. Because, you know, The Hunchback Notre Dame is from the 20s as well.
Have you done Vampyr?
No.
Have you seen that?
That is, it's on my list, though, but let me see here.
Oh, that's a little later?
I think so, here. Yeah, Vampyr is in the 30s, 1932. Oh, okay. It's on my list.
Yeah, that one to me, The Unknown definitely feels like a silent movie, like a silent Hollywood movie. They have a certain style to them versus a lot of Vampyr to me felt like it could have been like a 1960s Art Nouveau thing or something, you know, like French New Wave, you know, like they were like, we decided to make it silent to be even edgier. You know, it has a lot of more like the, maybe part of that is just having a better print too, you know, like some of that stuff, it's hard to know.
Yeah, it is.
But, Gollum might be from the 20s. Der Gollum.
I think that sounds familiar too.
I'm not sure what decade that one's from offhand. That's a pretty good one.
Oh, looks, on my list, I actually have Waxworks from 1924.
Oh, that sounds good. I don't think I saw that one yet.
So that's my next one I got to do. It's already on the list. Dadgone. I thought I.
Good pick. Good pick.
But that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie. Once again, Brian, I got to thank you so much for introducing me to The Unknown from 1927. Now, where can everybody find you at?
So I have a couple projects going right now. I started my own podcast-ish thing called QRD Radio. So you can find that pretty much wherever you go for podcasts. It's me interviewing musicians and artists and just, interview is not really the right word, more having a conversation,
yeah.
But about their work. And, I have that going on. I run a coffee, comic, and plant shop with my wife called Rhizome, R-H-I-Z-O-M-E. And then I run a record label called Silber Records. And I have a bunch of music projects going on right now. The most popular one is like a minimalist 90s techno style thing called Muscle Mass that it's been building up steam lately. So those are my main projects as of March 2024. Nice. we're trying to make the world a little bit more interesting, better place.
Yeah, and for everybody out there that needs to know, Brian is my comic book hookup.
Yeah, so I try to hook it up.
If you're in the area and you have that itch where you need a comic book, you hit up Brian. He'll get you.
Sometimes, or even if you're not.
Sometimes,
in the area.
Sometimes, you know, I have this love-hate kind of thing when I see Brian. I'm like, man, I haven't seen you in a while. It's great to see you. But then I know I'm going to be slapping down $100 in comic books. I'm like, dang it. So it's like, ah.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like, I can't remember if you actually got it or if it's still in your drawer. But I think last time I saw you, I was like, do you need this Godzilla versus Charles Barkley book?
Oh, yeah.
This is like, why does this exist? I'm like, because you need it.
That's how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I try to figure out what people's tastes are, and then when I run across the thing they need, you know, I try to hook them up. And you know, it's weird. I'm gonna do a post about it soon on Instagram that I've been doing some where I post several panels from a comic and talk about it. That the '90s Barbies comics, they're way more valuable than they should be. But I got some that were really beat up cheap for my kid, and I was reading them, and they read just like this comic that's one of my favorite current comic called Ice Cream Man. They read exactly like them, except for the fact that there's no twist where somebody dies. You know, and so like the art is actually kind of in a similar simplistic style too, which kind of adds to it. So and I've been in contact a couple of times with the guy that writes it, so I'll probably tag him in it and see what his comment about it is, because there's a clown issue of Barbie where it's a clown's first day on the job, and he goes to the dry cleaners to get his outfit, and he accidentally gets Skipper's dress instead. And so he puts it on, and Skipper, you know, is going to the prom or whatever, and she gets the clown outfit, and hijinks ensue.
Wow.
Yeah.
90s Barbies. I never knew that they had. I bet you my daughter would love those too. Nah, stop. I don't need any more comic books.
Yeah. You're trying to go in comic debt. But yeah.
Yep.
All right, man.
Yeah, that's it. That's the end of this episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Thank you again, Brian, for joining me and having a chat about The Unknown from 1927. Everybody out there, sweet dreams. Love, peace, and chicken grease. And that's going to do it for the day. Thanks for hanging out with me and letting me bend your ear for a while. Ain't no time for bad shine. And until next time, don't forget. You're wrong.
Later, Tater.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night, and God bless America.